From theunce.com, this is the Unce Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunce.com. Welcome to the Unce Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. My guest today is Sophia Tufa, better known simply as Sophie. Before she was the namesake of Deadmau5's super smash hit Sophie Needs a Ladder, Tufa was a dancer, singer, and actor, choreographing videos for Avril Lavigne, the Von Bondies, and Nelly Furtado, and hitting the road with Britney Spears on her 2009 circus tour. Now, she's been fully immersed in the electronic dance music world, producing tracks with Skrillex and Foreign Beggars, and releasing her first EP, Locked and Loaded Part 1. That record is out now on Mousetrap Recordings, and it's shot to the top of the Beatport charts. Today's show is brought to you by The Flying Skulls. The Bay Area duo just released their album West Coast Bass on STS9's label 1320 Records. The Flying Skulls' Jay Tonal and his partner Esau have blended the glitch hop, downtempo, and dubstep of the past few years to produce a record that speaks to all the movements taking place in this time of great flux in the industry. Utilizing major figures from the Bay, as well as the nation and the world, The Flying Skulls' new record is an audio history of the times. Let's check out the album's opening track, Beats by the Pound, which features Audio Angel, Cardiff's Mudmouth, and some instrumentation from the boys in Lotus.
Disgustingly gorgeous.
War dragons snapping bubblegum puppets.
Always back the props, fuck profits. So all praise the amazing Caucasian who never went soft and let money make him. A more propane killer mic always. I woke up in my killer beat scorch face. So don't never step foot in my doorway. I'll chew a soft rapper up till my jaw breaks.
We're rocking with the Flying Skulls, killing it young.
Mud takes flight on a flying skull with a flame so bright that the sky will dull. Duck for cover, taste that blue thunder. The killer clown's back blowing blooms out the gutter. Feel the moon dim and crow sing as my sound waves crash out this black ocean. Rope no poetry, gold flow potency. Laughing at your click, trying to throw stone boulders at me. We don't do pain around these parts. Where the kids self mutilate the truth lies. Spark Bob Marley's and crash parties. A freak show theme park, knee deep in dark dreams. See your limelight when my mic's right. But I rhyme like a sight splitting sci-fi. Fireworks, fireworks, your kiddie shit don't work. Try a verse, cause word of mouth is mouth's on form.
Beats by the Pound from the Flying Skulls. Let's get to the interview with Sophie.
So let's get into your background, because even though you've burst onto the scene in a big way, you've had this whole career before entering the world of electronic music. You're a singer, you're a dancer, you're an actor, and that doesn't happen by accident. Were your folks pushing you into the arts, or were you just like any kid growing up, wanted to end up in Hollywood?
You know what? My parents were actually completely against me doing any of this stuff, and I think that's what drove me to do it even more. They were not pushy at all. They were, you know, they were like, go to school, become a lawyer, something normal, you know what I mean? My dad used to be in a band, and he's a drummer, and there's always been a lot of music and at home. So I think it was just inevitable that I'll end up there. But it wasn't my parents that actually got me into it. I just started doing, like, little shows at school when I was, like, 7 years old and getting my friends together and study choreographies that we would see on MTV. So it was definitely something that I just wanted to do and started pursuing. And then, yeah, one thing led to the other.
So, yeah, I'm assuming then that dance was your first consuming passion. Did you do it all, ballet, jazz, hip-hop?
You know, I started doing hip-hop. First, I remember my first ballet class was probably like 5 years after I was already dancing all over the place. And this teacher just looked at me and was like, you're a hip hop dancer, right? So I did not have the classical training at first. Mm-hmm. I started, you know, at hip hop jams, just like getting together with kids at like little youth hostel parties and stuff like that. I grew up in Germany, so the scene was really, really small. It was really learning by doing and doing it yourself and just kind of getting together. There wasn't a lot going on where I grew up. So, and it was all pre-YouTube. So we didn't really have the connection to, you know, what I guess American kids had or kids in the UK or whatever.
Sure, sure. And choreography has always been fascinating to me because I've never quite understood it. With music, you develop a song, you write it, you perform it, you record it, and people see it or hear it and then want to buy it. How do you develop a set of moves and then convince other people that, A, these are the moves they want to do, and B, that you even know what you're doing?
That's an interesting question. I never really thought about it. Again, it's something that just kind of naturally happened to me because, I didn't have access to taking dance classes. So inevitably, I had to choreograph myself. And I look at it that way. It's just, you know, just like you said, creating music and writing it, you're basically creating the body language to what you feel and what you hear in the music. So I guess, you know, if it responds to people and if they can feel what you feel or see the language that you're portraying, then I guess you did a good job, maybe.
That makes sense. And while you're slowly working your way into the scene and moving up in the world of dance, helping choreograph videos for Avril Lavigne, Fall Out Boy, yeah. Will.i.am, how does the singing part of your career advance?
I mean, I've always been singing in between. You know, I did like studio work for other artists and backup vocal jobs. And I used to be in like a little R&B group when I was growing up in Germany. So it was always still part of me, but not as active as dancing was because I wasn't on tour singing. I don't know. I think for me, it all goes hand in hand because I get bored really easily. So I was told once there's no one way for an artist. And I really think I took that to heart.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's just so many different languages of being creative and expressing yourself. And there's, you know, some things that you just can't say while you're dancing and some things that you just can't communicate while you're singing. I just love both so much. And the fact that I can do both right now is really, really awesome.
Absolutely. And I imagine working in the pop world exposed you to a lot of producers, a lot of technical studio wizards who are either hiding behind the glass or behind a console. Is that how you were introduced to the world of electronic music, or had it surrounded you because you were in the dance world and that's half of it?
Well, I got introduced to dance music at a really early age. Like I mentioned, I grew up in Germany, so, you know, the club scene there was really, really big, and you get to go to clubs if you look old enough. So by the time I was like 13, 14, I was already dancing my ass off in like grimy old clubs, and, you know, they go to like 5, 6 in the morning, and you just put on your sweats and you go and dance. It's not that, you know, fancy Hollywood glam kind of, you know, electronic music that is hip right now.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the underground scene. So I was always in touch with it, but I never really imagined to be doing that kind of music. Like, I never really thought about it consciously. But, yeah, I definitely met, you know, a lot of producers, a lot of, you know, professional people along the way and could see how they work. And you just learn a lot by watching people, and you just kind of absorb everything and then take it in for yourself. And it's a really good learning process, honestly.
Here's a new track from Sophie. This is Joyride featuring Foreign Beggars, produced by Millions Like Us.
1, 2, yeah. Millions Like Us. OV, Foreign Beggars. What's up, Sophie? Buckle up, let's go.
It's kinda crazy.
Sophie's latest release, Locked and Loaded Part 1, out now on Mousetrap Records. Let's switch gears to Mr. Mousetrap himself. This is Animal Rights with Wolfgang Gartner from Deadmau5's 4x4 equals 12.
It's been almost a year since Sophie Needs a Ladder was released on Ultra Records.
It's actually, you know what, on Halloween is a year.
Absolutely, absolutely. Tell me how you and Joel Zimmerman even got in the same room, how you started working together, and you know, obviously this relationship has blossomed, but right. Tell me about the genesis of that.
Well, in the first place, it was in 2007 when Joel just kind of started coming up himself, and I got a call from Tommy Lee, who I'd worked with before, on a project called Rockstar Supernova, and I did some backup vocals for that.
Mm-hmm.
So he just called me and was like, hey, we're working on this track. Do you have time to come up? And I'd just gotten off tour with Avril, and I was just in town, so you know, I got in my car and drove up to the studio, and I thought I was going to do some sort of rock project because Tommy didn't tell me anything, and I didn't really know that he was into electronic music at that point.
And this is his WTF project?
Yeah, correct, correct, with Arrow and Steve Duda and Joel. And we're just doing that. And I got in the studio, and there's, you know, Joel, Steve Duda, and Arrow and Tommy, and I was really confused about what I was hearing, and I'm like, what do you want me to do here? So we just started jamming on a couple tracks, one of them being Seabass, another one was called Let's Go, and another one was called Party Instructions, which I think we all did that within one day.
Mm-hmm.
And Joel was there with his, you know, first red mouse head that he had, and I was just asking him questions. I'm like, who are you? What do you do? And he's like, oh, I'm this, you know, producer from Toronto. I'm going to be wearing this mouse head. And I just put it on and started being silly. Yeah, you know, I had no idea because I was in my pop world. I didn't know what, you know, what was going on. When you're on tour, you're in your own bubble. You don't really realize what's going on around you because everything's just go, go, go.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, he wasn't really that huge. So I guess we just, you know, became friends then, and then, I don't know, it was like maybe 3-4 years later, he was recording most of his record here in L.A., and he asked me to do some vocals on this track. So, yeah, that track ended up being Sylvie Needs a Ladder, and we went on and performed it a week later at Ultrafest, which was mind-blowing to me, because I had no idea how massive he had gotten, and, you know, I'm on this giant stage thinking, what is going on here? So it's been a crazy ride, honestly. And then, you know, a year later, we got to go back to Ultrafest and everyone singing along to the lyrics. So it was quite mind-blowing.
I'm sure. I'm sure. And those lyrics, you know, speak to a lot of people, are very poignant. Did he give you free rein with those lyrics, or did he have any idea or concept of what the song would be like and when he brought it to you?
He gave me complete free range to do whatever I wanted. He just gave me the track and was like, here, just think of something. And I was like, okay. But I put on my headphones, I went upstairs, and it instantly spoke to me. Like, it was just so inspiring. And the funny thing about that is I'd been trying to figure out, you know, where to go with my own music. You know, after doing so much backup for other people, I really wanted to start doing my own project. But there was nothing that just caught me because I couldn't figure out where to go with my direction. I felt like that instrumental had so much, you know, that punk rock attitude. It was punchy, it was in your face, and it was really, really connecting to me personally. So I wrote the lyrics really quickly. They just kind of poured out, which was really special and inspiring to me. And then I presented them to Joel, and he just read them and nodded, and I was in front of the mic within no time, and he just stopped me right then and there within the first take and was like, can you do it a little more angry and aggressive? I was doing it a little more laid back. So, yeah, we did it. And within 4 hours, that thing was done.
That's incredible. And I imagine that freedom has sort of exploded outwards with your music. And I imagine being signed to Mousetrap gives you creative freedom like you've never experienced before.
Yeah, absolutely. And in a way, I mean, you know, I do feel a little more pressure now because I'm aware of what's going on and I'm aware of the scene and I'm more aware of, obviously, who Deadmau5 is and how big he is now. And so it is a little different than it was before because, you know, when he just gave me the track, it was just me and my buddy working on a track. I didn't think of anything. I didn't even know.
You had no idea if it was going to go anywhere.
Exactly. So it was really just me writing something. And now I do feel like, oh my gosh, you know, I gotta, you know, live up to a certain standard almost, you know what I mean? So it's a little more nerve-wracking than it was before.
And then you get to play insane venues like Red Rocks that's just packed to the brim and everybody knows the words.
I know, and that's absolutely crazy to me. It's insane.
This is the track, Deadmau5 with Sophie Needs a Ladder.
So let's talk about the new record, Locked and Loaded Part 1. First of all, why the decision to break it up? Did you just have so much material you wanted to just get it out there before it leaked or before, you know, your creative juices exploded?
Well, actually, you know, it's been really, really hard to record because I've been on the road most of this year. So every time I'm at home for like 2-3 days, I get in the studio. So I've had a collection of songs that I wanted to do, but originally I wanted to release the entire EP, which is 4 tracks. So it's not a lot of songs, you know, at all. But Skrillex called me at some point about a song that we had recorded together, and like a week or 2 weeks into the release, he was like, yeah, you know, I think we should do some changes to the song. So I could have held the entire EP just because of one song, but I did not want to do that because I told everybody that I was coming out with some songs and releasing certain tracks. So I felt like it wouldn't be fair to just wait on one song. And Skrillex is so busy, so it's quite hard for us to get together and, you know, do the certain changes that he wants to do for the song that we wrote together. So I decided to go with 2 parts, which also gives me some more time to work on maybe some more tracks while I'm at home and add them to the second part that's supposed to come out in December. So really the story about it, you know what I mean? I wish it could have been the entire EP, to be quite honest with you, but I'd rather have something out, you know, letting everybody hang, say, you know what, never mind, we're not releasing anything just because one song is not ready. It's just quite hard working with producers that, you know, are on tour as well.
Oh, it makes sense. But then you got to premiere Bring Out the Devil with Skrillex in San Diego, and that had to be a thrill to be able to do that, you know, right before your record comes out and get people excited about it.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I mean, it's all over YouTube, and it's got a lot of views so far just with, you know, pretty shitty quality. So it's cool that people are really excited about it, and I'm really excited about it, so I really can't wait to release it. And, I mean, the song has just kind of had, like, a tragic, you know, biography, if you will, just because Skrillex lost all the files, his computer was stolen, so we had to call Kill the Noise to reproduce the entire track. So it's been quite the ride with the song, and I feel like once it comes out, I'm going to be really relieved because I've had it for such a long time, you know what I mean? It's just been sitting with me, and I'm like, I can't wait to set the baby free and see it grow.
Sure. Along with Skrillex and Kill the Noise, tell me about Millions Like Us, who did a lot of production on the record.
Yep, they did the first part of the EP. Both the tracks Joyride and Broken Souvenirs they produced. That just came about through our management. We have, you know, we're both managed by the same team. So, you know, we just got introduced through them, and I really like their sound a lot, and they were keen on doing something together. So we basically started sending files back and forth. They sent me an instrumental, I sent vocals, and we just kept doing that. And then I felt like for Joyride, especially, I felt like we needed a rap by somebody, and I'm a huge Foreign Beggars fan, and I met Kevin in Australia. And, you know, I was kind of nervous to ask him if he would like to be on a track. And before I even could ask him, he just came to me and he was like, hey, if you ever need anything, you know, I'm so down to work with you. I was like, oh, my gosh, you know, it's such an honor. And, yeah, I've been, like, a big fan of his. And he's, like, the coolest dude ever. So we became good friends. And he's, like, one of those brothers I never had. Like, we have a really good connection. So, yeah, that's how this came about. And then I met the Millions Like Us guys during the video shoot in London. That was the first time I met him, actually, but after the tracks were done.
I gotta ask, I mean, coming from this pop world into this screaming, grimy, crazy land of dubstep, how do you even adjust or make that adjustment so quickly and then excel in it? Was it, did it just feel natural when you heard the style of music and the way that these productions work together, or do you not even view it as so different from what you were doing?
You know what? It's really natural to me because although I was working in the pop scene a lot, I've also worked in the rock scene, and that's what's always spoken to me more personally. You know, I used to listen to a lot of like punk rock and rock, and I feel like that's the same energy that you get from dubstep. So as far as it being an adjustment, it really isn't, because personally I feel more connected to that kind of music anyways.
And I was speaking with Tommy last week, and we were talking about how dubstep seems like the natural extension of metal, and you see Korn working with Skrillex and 12th Planet on their new record, and you just see how that progression's happened with zero guitars. It's kind of strange, but it just seems like it, that, you know, that's the direction direction that this music has been moving in.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, I see kids mosh pitting, you know, to dubstep, which is the equivalent to rock to me, you know what I mean? I feel like it has the same energy, the same power, and like you said, it feels the same, and it's just a natural progression at this point. So that's what happens with music. It just changes over time, and to the, you know, younger generation, this is their rock and roll.
Absolutely. And finally, you're going to be part of this huge blowout at Petco Park for Halloween. Deadmau5, mm-hmm. Avicii, Tommy Lee and Arrow, Feed Me. That's got to be an immense thrill. Just they had to move the venue. It's an enormous place. And, you know, it's Halloween, so it's going to be crazy.
I know. I'm so excited. It's just honestly been such a great ride, and it's just been really exciting to see and to be part of a crazy movement like that. You know what I mean? It's so far from mainstream, but it draws so many people that it almost seems like it's Woodstock used to be before FM radio and all this stuff. You know what I mean? It's got a really cool positive energy to it and a cool vibe, and I'm just excited to be part of something like that and be able to experience it, and I don't know, maybe 10 years from now I'll have a good story to tell.
One or two maybe.
Yeah.
Sophia Tufa, we're excited about Locked and Loaded Part 2. Thanks so much for being on the UNS podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for taking the time.
That's going to do it for this week's episode. We'll go out with a new one from Sophie. This is Broken Souvenirs. Special thanks go to John Ochoa with MSOPR, and of course my guest, Sophia Tufa. Catch her tonight at the Santa Barbara Bowl with Jason Bentley, Feed Me, La Castlevania, and of course, Deadmau5. And then again tomorrow night for the big Halloween bash at Petco Park in San Diego. That's October 28th with Deadmau5, Feed Me, Avicii, and Tommy Lee and DJ Arrow. Locked and Loaded Part 2, featuring a track from Skrillex, will be out in December on Mousetrap Recordings. Remember, the second annual UNS Challenge is underway. We've got 16 competitors going head-to-head in the chill category, and your votes will determine who will join Sir Charles, Control Freaks, Laser Sex, and Joe Sadowski in the final round. Please visit theUNS.com/theUNSChallenge2 for more details and to cast your vote. Win tickets to see Porter Robinson, Designer Drugs, Infected Mushroom, and more by visiting theUNS.com/contests. Please visit theUNS.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review. Tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, you'd like to be a guest on the UNS podcast, or you'd like to sponsor an episode, contact me at anand@theUNS.com. That's A-N-A-N-D at theUNS.com. Join the conversation at the UNS Podcast on Twitter. We'll catch you next week.